This show AMC, GameStop, and a lot of the meme stocks are crashing. Is this the end of the meme stocks? We're going to hear from Michael Burry. Of course, he was the brains behind The Big Short. He says the fun is over. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia could be standing in the way of stimulus once again, proving once again that he is the most powerful senator in the land. He gets to drive the narrative. So we're going to hear from Senator Joe Manchin on all of this, on stimulus, not good. And how many jobs do you need to work in order to make ends meet in the United States? Can you guess? Let me know in the chat. How many jobs you think it takes in order to make ends meet in the United States? Morning Invest starts right now. Welcome to Morning Invest. I'm Clayton Morris. This is the show that teaches you how to build wealth by turning those short-term profits into long-term holds. We're live every morning right here at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Good to see all of you. Philip is in the old control booth today. David is off today. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. Good morning, everybody.
So a lot of people weighing in. So Frederick says two jobs. It takes two jobs. Kimberly says three jobs. Tyler says three. Isn't that crazy? Like, that's like top of your head right now. It's like, oh, three jobs, two jobs. Remember when George W. Bush famously was giving a speech and a woman said, Mr. President, you know, I'm working three jobs to take care of my kids and provide. And he just stopped and he said, that is just uniquely American. And he, like, everyone give her a round of applause. That's just did he not get the irony of, I don't know.
There's that great disconnect, you know, like oh man, right. It's amazing. Like, well, it's funny because like I don't think about it, but I do one thing, but I have multiple clients, so it ends up being where I might as well I could consider it working like two to three jobs.
Right. Yeah. Multiple clients, multiple gigs. I mean, and that's just very, very common. But we're going to tell you how many. It's going to be, it's a pretty stunning number to, and in fact, to live and work in one of the biggest areas of the country in the cities. We'll tell you about that. Also, by the way, did you see this? I don't know how many of you guys want to try this or not. We featured this in the newsletter this morning. How many of you would be down to try this? This is new. And apparently people love it. It's the Kraft macaroni and cheese ice cream. This is out. This is taking the internet by storm this morning. French ice cream. Would you guys try this? I would say absolutely not.
Yeah, no, I mean, way. I don't eat ice cream. Like, I don't really eat sweets at all. So, I might taste it, but I wouldn't eat it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, be like, okay, I'm done. I'm good. Like, but that being your favorite ice cream, I don't know, cheese and ice cream, no thanks. So you get your hands on that. That is now on sale, so you can get some of that. All right, let's check the markets this morning. I want to get into what's going on with AMC, what's going on with these meme stocks. The movie theater chain stock tumbled 15%. 15% down, not looking good right now. AMC share price gets cut in half as reality is starting to set in. 15% down to $33 a piece on Wednesday. That's less than half of its all-time high back on $72.62 back in June, in early June. The decline brought its month-to-date losses to 41%. Also, GameStop, the original sort of king of the memes, that stock has also fallen more than 21% this month. And you have newcomers like Clover Health and Clean Energy. Clover, I traded some Clover, CLOV, a few weeks ago, made some good money on some trades there, day traded that. But it has also plunged down 34% and 22% for Clean Energy Fuels Company. So not looking good. I know you hang out on the Reddit forums, Philip. What are people saying, like, on Wall Street Bets? Are they... I don't know what's going on over there.
Well, I've been a little bit busier lately than usual, but two, it's been kind of quiet overall on most of the subreddits. It really spent when some of the memes coins kind of, you know, like took a dive, like when Dogecoin stuff. I guess it was like everything kind of like quieted down with them. So I haven't really seen a whole lot on the AMC, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, they're just being quiet. I mean, like, so I the question is like, well, where are these apes? Everyone talks about, you know, Ape Nation, like, I don't know any apes. Like, I mean, and I'm saying that not to be sarcastic. Like, when people are like, no, we're apes, we're ruling this thing, you know, we're running the show here. It's like, well, okay, But where are they? Like, where are these so-called apes hanging out? Like, I don't know where, I don't know any of them. You know, a person that owns one share of AMC is not an ape. You know, a few shares, that's not, we're talking people that own millions of dollars worth of shares, and they're just getting squashed right now. And AMC, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can tell you that Michael Burry, of the Big Short fame, he says that these meme stocks are done. He said these things are going to crash as new money continues to dry up. He says that the Reddit-favored meme stocks are set to crash like the dot-com bubble and the housing markets of previous decades. He says we're running out of new money available to jump on the bandwagons, Burry told Barron's newspaper. You know, he says, I don't know when meme stocks such as this will crash, but when we probably do not have to, we probably don't have to wait too long, he says. He says, I believe the retail crowd is fully invested in the theme and Wall Street has jumped on the coattails. And I think, folks, that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit this morning is that, you know, you have all of this market manipulation from Wall Street. They learned their lesson. They learned their lesson on GameStop. They got squeezed hard. And now you can see it. All you need to do is day trade. Well, you can see it. The market manipulators right in the algorithm. You can see the algorithms working. And you know, they're not going to get screwed again like they got screwed on GameStop. They have an infinite pocket. You know, they have an infinite bank account to work with. So, you know, King Vortex Gaming here says, I'm an ape. Thank you for the super chat. And it's market manipulation going on right now. XX shares. King, I mean, you don't have to tell me how many shares you own, but if you want to, you can tell me in the chat. Like, do you own a lot of shares? And what does it mean to be an ape? I'm curious what that means.
So the apes in that were, they were more, like I said, almost like closer to not really activism, because it wasn't really like, it wasn't necessarily like the social justice aspect of it, but they're, the apes are the ones that, you know, like what they say, diamond hands, like they have the stock, they're not selling it back. So they're trying to, they were trying to short squeeze Citadel and some of these other hedge funds that were, were like shorting it, you know, like 1,000% or more, you know? And so that was the whole like ape thing, as far as I understand it. I mean, I fully admit I'm not 100% like involved in it. So I don't know. It's just what I've gathered.
Tyler says you can beat the institutions. Did you mean to add a T there, Tyler? I think you can't beat the institutions. I mean, good luck. You might get lucky from time to time, but I'm telling you, when they have an infinite pocketbook and they have infinite resources where they can trade both sides of the fence, short, long, short, long, short, long, back and forth over the, like, at certain pennies and certain 10-cent frames, I mean, good luck. But really getting squeezed right now. I just don't see it. I mean, I don't... the only stock in... Yeah, I mean, it's just the institutions do control the markets. You know, they absolutely do control the markets. But, you know, again, I just don't understand. So I get the point of it, like diamond hands and holding these things. But holding it for what purpose? Like, if you're holding it because you really believe, like, is there someone who's like really an AMC enthusiast that they absolutely believe that AMC is going to be incredibly profitable? Is it someone that really loves movie theaters? I just don't get the... I'm just not sure what the end game is if you're diamond hand holding AMC right now.
So because...
How are they going to expand? How are they going to expand?
Well, that's the thing is what they're doing is it has less to do with the... I mean, it's like the common phrase is, you know, I love this stock. So they're constantly saying they love the stock. But really, the idea is because these hedge funds were so over... extended with these shorts that by not selling the stock, by holding onto the stock, like buying it and holding it, they can't actually close their accounts like they need. I can't remember the exact terminology, but so these hedge funds then can't buy those stocks back that they shorted like they need to. And so they're essentially like losing billions. That was initially what had happened with the whole GameStop and AMC was.
Yeah. I just don't see it. I mean, early this morning, we're down six, AMC down already, down about 6% in the pre-market already, GameStop is. So Michael Burry saying, this this free ride is over. I thought it was interesting last night too. I mean, there's an idea floating around. What if AMC and GameStop merged? Like, there you go. Now we'd have something. But here's how it played out yesterday as these stocks are continuing to plummet. Watch this.
AMC announcing it's not going to seek shareholder approval to boost the number of shares it has outstanding. Remember, Chris, this is important because the company has reached its limit in terms of how much stock it can sell, how many shares it can actually have, and it needed authorization from shareholders to sell more, to raise more money, to potentially change its trajectory in some fashion.
So what do you do now? You know, I mean, how do you grow? If you're AMC, what do? You know, you've got maybe some cash, so what are you going to buy up other movie theater chains? Is that how you expand? But if people aren't really going to the movies in droves like they used to, is it a growing market, especially when you can watch Black Widow on Disney Plus at home? I mean, Disney saw a huge surge in quarterly earnings. I mean, I don't know about you, but to get all of the kids in the car, get to the movie theater, deal with all of that, it's much easier, like on a Friday night, just order some pizza, sit down, turn on Disney Plus and watch Black Widow and pay like that extra premium for it. And then you're saving money because you're not driving anywhere. You sit there. You don't have to deal with masks and all that garbage. I don't know about you, but you know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm much more apt to sit at home and watch something. But that brings up something that I guess I've never really thought about until you'd mentioned it just now. But can a company just create more stock shares and sell it like you could, yeah, like a currency?
A split, you know. So what you're doing is, yeah, you're doing a stock split, and so you're taking your 100 shares and you're splitting it into 200. So it's a, you know, basically a dilution of the shares, you know, and you're in many ways you're making each share less valuable. And so, okay,
I was wondering if that would, like, you know, almost like a stock market inflation. Like, does that happen? Like, can they, when it starts trading at a certain point, is there a fixed number of shares that a company has, and they can split those, but they can't just like create more. Like, you could just print more money, right?
Well, in some ways you can. I mean, that's the thing. That's why I'm not a huge fan of owning companies like this, like paper, you know, having paper assets, because again, if a stock goes down to $0 in value, that's what happens. You know, you end up basically with zero. I mean, and because the board is going to be taken care of first before any shareholders will be taken care of. Yeah, they can absolutely, when they IPO, when they have their initial public offering, they have a set amount that's up for sale, the float, if you will. That's how many shares are available to buy. And then as a company expands and, you know, you want to sell more of it, then they end up, you know, doing a split, and therefore each share is basically worth less than it was. King Vortex says GameStop is offering an NFT dividend very soon, which will expose all of the FTDs and synthetic shares. AMC just sold out of all their theaters for the UFC pay-per-view. Interesting. So King, I'm just curious, like, why are you an ape? Like, what are you so bullish on with this? I just don't understand it. I don't, and it's not, and I'm asking because I don't know. I really just don't understand, like, what is the bullishness on AMC beyond the meme aspect of it, you know, beyond the, hey, we're sticking it to Wall Street aspect of it. I get that piece, the David and Goliath piece, but where do you see like real growth, you know? Brenton, no, you are not the only one that thinks NFTs are stupid. You're not the only one. I still have a lot of questions about NFTs. I don't know.
Oh, see, I was going to say, no, Brenton, you're the only one on earth. Everyone else is like, no, let's all get on board. All of us.
Yeah. Let's all get on board with non-fungible tokens. Like, okay. You know, I'm just curious. I'm just curious. I love going to the movie theater. I absolutely love going to the movie theater. I do. I love big event movies, you know. But this, I have to think, will be the first Marvel movie that I haven't seen in the theater. Like, this will be this Black Widow one when we watch it this weekend. Like, that's going to be the one, you know.
We just got done with Loki, my daughter and I. And
so, oh, I want to watch that. I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
In my opinion, yes, very.
So I heard it's the best Marvel show they've ever made.
So oh, I'd yeah. Like to I see. Mean, I agree.
Yeah. Nice. I want to check that out. So, yeah, if you're just tuning in, AMC share prices get cut in half. Reality setting in now for the meme stocks and GameStop pre-market. Down about 6% in pre-market. Again, that's on top of the 15% it was down yesterday. Good luck if you want to play this stock. I mean, just take a look at this morning. It's just been a continual decline from its all-time high. So good luck. Good luck if you're playing that. You're hoping this thing's going to bounce back. Good luck on it. Good luck. Hey, we do have some other stocks I'm watching, though, today. These are the stocks I'm watching on this Thursday that I'll be day trading a little bit later today, ones that I'm most excited about. So Zilla, HUDI, hoodie. I guess I'm going to call it hoodie. CDIM, Arlo is popping, and DTSS, but fairly weak across the board. I would say, I think across the board, the scanners are looking pretty weak right now. But scanners shouldn't like dictate your day. I'm just kind of looking at my scanners right now, and Hoodie, HUDI, still holding up a bit, needs a little bit of a pop. Pre-market, these are the biggest movers right now that I'm keeping my eye on. So we'll see as the market opens here in about 45 minutes. All right, we've got a lot of other news to get to today. We're going to talk about stimulus, the child tax credits rolling out, what Jay Powell thinks about the economy. We're going to hear from him and so much more. Plus, get in your votes now. How many jobs do you think it takes to make ends meet in the United States? How many jobs do you have to work? Drop the comments in the comments box here, and we'll see who's right. Who's right about it? At least in one particular city, we'll get there. But I want to tell you about our friends over at Podium right now. Look, I think it's so incredibly important if you're a business owner to be able to communicate with your customers and how to do it in the 21st century. I mean, how to do it now, you need text messaging. So Podium is on demand. I mean, you basically want to be able to communicate. You can especially have those things emerge from this past year where you want to get an answer to something quickly. You need to get answers quickly from whatever company you're working with. You can't just wait days to get answers anymore. If you're a business, that's going to crush you. I will move on and work with another company if you can't communicate. Your customers have grown to expect a simpler way of doing business, no matter what's your product. That's why more than 90,000 local businesses of all sizes have turned to Podium. Here's how Podium works. It makes doing business as easy as sending a text message, because when texts get open, business gets done. All your employees can text from a single inbox, offering a smoother experience for your customers. Answer questions, send a text. Collecting reviews for your website, send a text. Schedule an appointment or delivery from your company, send a text message. Payment collection, just send a text message. What's really cool, like retailers are increasing revenue by allowing customers to shop via text messaging. Even stores open, many people still want to just shop from home. A jeweler just sold a $5,000 ring with a few text messages and even coordinated curbside pickup using Podium. A dentist in New York City had $1 million in overdue collections. He sent everyone a text payment request and collected $700,000 in just 2 weeks. That's awesome. So here's where you get to try it. Even for local businesses, stay ahead of the competition with Podium. They have free plans for growing businesses, plus all the power growing businesses need to scale. Get started for free today at podium.com/invest. That's podium.com/invest. Our thanks to Podium. All right, let's talk about the child tax credit, everyone, because they started today. Did you check your bank account this morning? You might have noticed that your bank account was a little bit larger this morning. Well, it's the biggest win for parents since the invention of the iPad. You don't want the kids talking at dinner. Like, you prop up an iPad in front of them. The IRS is going to start sending out these supersized checks for the expanded child tax credit, the CTC. That starts today. So a lot of you, I'm curious, let me know in the chat, have many of you woken up this morning to see that you've received it? If you are, obviously, you have to have kids. That's part of the deal. You have to have children that you know about. And in that way, you would be a candidate for this. So I'm curious. You got mine. So Tina says she got hers. Tuffy says, I'm still waiting for the $1,400 stimulus. Carlos says he got his. Brenton says he got his. There you go. Crystal says hadn't gotten it yet. Well, as part of the coronavirus stimulus package passed back in March, the Biden administration set aside $105 billion to hike up the child tax credit to $1,600 per child. It's one of the White House's biggest economic policies. Here's why. You know, the expanded child tax credit is expected to cut poverty by nearly half, according to a study from Columbia University. Almost 90% of the U.S. 74 million children would qualify for the program. Some of the standard credit increases went to $3,600 for a child under six and $3,000 for a child between the ages of 6 and 17, compared to the current $2,000 per child under the age of 17 years old. So the CTC is now fully refundable, meaning low-income families who don't owe federal taxes can feel the credit's full effect for the first time in recent history. The real big question to me right now is it going to stick around? Like, are we going to continue this? Or is this, it's just stimulus and Democrats won't get on board with trying to push this even further? Will people like Joe Manchin sort of sit on the sidelines with this? The current expansion will expire after 1 year, but President Biden asked for a 4-year extension in his American Families Plan. I think it's got to push further. Some senators like Cory Booker, New Jersey's Cory Booker, and Colorado's Michael Bennett want to make it permanent, saying it will have a profound impact on working families. Say it's the most transformative policy coming out of Washington since the days of FBR. That's what Booker says. I think it is too. I can't name another program that's as large. He says that'll receive, there's a lot of lawmakers right now who are sort of pushing back on this idea, saying it's too costly and it will disincentivize parents from finding work, which, as we know, there's been no evidence of that. And it's going to lift people out of poverty. What it means for businesses, though, Cohen called the expanded CTC an underappreciated stimulus plan that's going to boost sales for retailers like Walmart, Target, Nike. So a lot of these companies, we saw that during the first run of stimulus, right? That these companies had record earnings. People, when they have money, are spend it on backpacks and school clothes and school supplies and things like that. And they actually put it back into the economy. And it helps businesses. It helps small businesses as well. Maria says, I got mine, but it was shorted $50. Crystal says, I don't see how $300 a month will make that big of a difference. I mean, maybe you can't see that. And I'm not saying you're wrong, Crystal, but for a lot of people, $300 a month per child is transformative.
I mean, that's easily what my daughter eats in groceries like every month, just her. I'm sure that's even on the low end. I mean, you know, having a teenage daughter, like she's voracious sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, think about, okay, you need new shoes for school. You need, you know, shirts and shorts or whatever. You need, hey, there's summer camp, you know, they've got a soccer camp or whatever. They need to get cleats. I mean, all these little things just continue to add up. Tormann says, I got my check yesterday. I have a 16-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and 2 1-year-old kids. Received $1,600. Not complaining, just thought the math was $1,700. Grateful anyway. Yeah, because it's under six. So six. So you. I'm not sure on the math either. I guess it depends. It certainly depends on income level and all of that as well. But it's a big deal. I mean, I think it's absolutely transformative. Maria says, I should have gotten $300 for my 3-year-old, but only got $250. Hmm. $300 a month would help my income a lot, but it won't happen for people like me. I needed that stimulus 10 years ago. My kids were at home, Janet says. Frederick says, yeah, what about college students? Books. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's also a huge ripoff. I mean, these textbooks at universities. I remember I was stunned when I went to the University of Pittsburgh and I had to go to the school bookstore. And you're like, what, $150 for this stupid statistics book? Are you kidding me? I don't know if it's gotten any better now, like where you can just get them on a Kindle, a digital version of it for a fraction of the cost. I don't know if it's any different, but that's awful.
It's the same price that I was paying, because I went, it was what, 2000... It was the later 2000s when I was at Portland State, and there were some textbooks that I paid like $120, and it was a printout in a 3-ring binder that the professor had done. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, I remember I had a music class for my guitar class, and my professor, he made his, like, he had his own book, right? It was like the teacher's name on this like blue paper printed thing with like a hole punch on the end. And I ended up having to pay like $39 for it.
Oh, yeah.
And there were photocopies. They were like photocopies of his sheet music. $39. What a racket. I mean, for, don't even get me started about, you know, overpriced universities in the United States and why we're even sitting in student loan debt to begin with. But get me started there. But yeah, it's just disgusting. So that's starting today. The next, you know, next big thing we want to talk about today on the show is Jerome Powell. And I want to talk about what he had to say yesterday. So a lot of news. If you watched my video last night, I kind of gave a nice little early summation of it. Now that we've had more time to let this digest a little bit. This morning, treasuries are up as a result of the Fed showing basically continued support for what's going to happen here in the marketplace. So the treasuries rallied overnight. Wall Street basically saying, hey, this is great news. Jay Powell says that, so for now, we're not doing anything, basically. We're going to keep our eyes on inflation. We're going to keep looking at it. But for the most part, we're not doing anything. And we're going to continue to prop up Wall Street. So treasuries rallied on that news. Wall Street doing the happy dance this morning. Totally fine with that. They don't have anything to worry about. They're, you know, super happy. You know, and again, at what point do we pull back on this? Do we pull back and say, enough now, you know, enough now on propping up big banks in Wall Street, $120 billion that you're spending per month so that they can remain liquid? And we're seeing banks this past week with record profits. JP Morgan, I mean, on and on the list went this week. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, everyone's doing great. So you're not basically, and he said basically, we're going to announce, we will provide ample notice. We're going to let you know well ahead of time, before we start tapering, when we start pulling back that money to Wall Street.
We didn't try to write down a particular set of numbers that would capture what we mean by that. And it would have been complicated and not particularly worthwhile. So we thought. So we said substantial further progress, which is similar to what we did during the recovery of the global financial from the global financial crisis years ago. We had a similar kind of set of words for when we would taper asset purchases. So the thing is, it's very difficult to be precise about it because with maximum employment, there are no three or four or five or six metrics that you could point to. It really is a very broad range of things, including wages, unemployment, levels of employment, participation, all those things. So we just said substantial further progress. And we also said that we would provide advance notice, you know, well in advance of actually tapering, so that understanding that this is somewhat of a discretionary test and that we don't want to surprise markets or the public. So we will provide lots of notice as we go forward on that. And we have another FOMC meeting in a couple of weeks from today, and we'll have another round of discussions on this very topic. We didn't try to allude to write.
So there you go. So today, it's going to be back in front of the Senate Finance Committee today. Yesterday, we're in front of the House. So they're going to give us ample knowledge, ample warning when we actually are going to move into tapering and pulling back all of this money. So for now, we're fine. He said a bunch of other things yesterday too, did Powell. He talked about crypto. He talked about stable coins, that we need to have regulation there. He said that we're going to have some difficulty implementing this digital currency for the United States. He talked about housing prices. They are a concern, but there's little that he can do at the Fed. There's not much that they can do at all at the Federal Reserve on that issue. Homelessness was also addressed, talked quite a bit about that. And, you know, it was asked about all of these, you know, homes that are people being kicked out of their homes and tent cities popping up everywhere and home prices just skyrocketing. And he said, you know, there's just little that we can do. I mean, we're the Fed. We can't. It's nothing we really can do about that. He also said, interestingly, and he got some pushback from Ann Wagner, Republican senator or Republican member of the House. And he said, look, you know, inflation is just temporary. It's only here for a short amount of time. Don't worry about it. It's only in certain sectors like hospitality and others. And she pushed him back and said, with all due respect, Chair Powell, it's in housing. The prices of housing skyrocketing. It's in groceries. It's in everything. And he kind of, you know, didn't agree and kind of pushed back on that idea and said, look, we're keeping our eye on it very closely on prices. But I would say it's not, he thinks it's going to be, it'll moderate by the end of the year. Like all of these increases in prices are going to moderate by the end of the year. What do you guys think?
Housing too, or I mean, like,
I mean, everything. I mean, I guess he says it's just temporary. He really made the point, drove home the point yesterday. Temporary, temporary, temporary. He said it a bunch of times.
Because there are places like the Hamptons, for one, where their housing prices have driven rents so high that people who work can't live there. And so they're running out of people in town that can do the lower wage jobs.
Yeah. I mean, look at this story. Look at this headline today. Americans are leaving, moving to Europe to find affordable homes. Well, you can't find it in Canada. So they're moving to Europe where they can get land, they get a better quality of life, they get health care, they get no student loan debt for school, they have no violence, no drug crime. They're moving to Europe where they're taken care of because of home prices. With travel opening up, European Union, second home markets in countries like Italy, Portugal, Greece have seen a huge uptick. I was talking to somebody that works for the ambassador, saying, yeah, they're just seeing a ton of people coming in. A ton of people coming into Europe. All they need, they said they want to be near the water, they want to live in Venice, 3 or 4 bedrooms, people come to visit, they end up staying. I mean, they're getting this, you know, incredible deals and saving a lot of money just by moving to Europe, like much more space. And by the way, I should point out the interest rates in Europe to get a home loan. Does anybody have any idea what the interest rates are to get a home loan in the European Union? If you don't know, I'll tell you, zero. And in fact, negative interest rates across Europe, zero. You can basically get a mortgage for nothing. And they'll give you 45-year mortgages or 40-year mortgages. So is any wonder why just Americans are, I mean, okay, but it's getting bad. Yeah, Tina says zero. Yeah.
Zero. All right, everybody in chat, let's go.
Let's go. Yeah. Yeah. Cody says, we researched Estonia and Australia and never thought I would ever consider such a thing. Yeah, Australia is very expensive. Estonia, though, like I always make fun of Estonia because it's beautiful, but I make fun of it because, well, I make fun of the United States. United States has worse internet access than Estonia. Like Estonia has better internet speeds than the United States of America. But you can't even find Estonia on a map, and they have better infrastructure than we do. Hey, Tammy is here. Good to see you. Wendy King says, I'm moving to Europe next year. Are you joking? Or are you serious? Yeah. Exactly. Nathaniel Gilchrist says, America is not the place to be anymore, if it ever has been. Yeah. So again, U.S. home prices surging. Americans are setting their sights on Europe. Not a surprise. Not a surprise. We're going to talk stimulus in a minute and where things stand on the big stimulus package and why we need additional stimulus. Although I did see Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania on this morning. He was rattling on and on about how everyone's doing fine and we don't need this thing. We don't need any additional stimulus and certainly don't need what Democrats want, which is, you know, making sure that we're energy independent and making sure that we're not relying on fossil fuels. We don't need to do that. Unbelievable. And I don't know if you saw this today, the European Union announcing that it wants to get rid of, ban, end the combustion engine by the year 2035. So no more sales of cars that have a combustion engine that burn fossil fuels. In 2035, that's it. Unbelievable. So that's, I mean, think about it. It's not that far away. And that's a transformative move. Like if you're any of these big car companies and you're thinking, and your plan is already moving towards electric vehicles anyway, good for you. But if you're not, this is just the push you needed. If you want to be able to sell cars in Europe in the future, sorry, no fossil fuels. So sometimes we just need Europe to kick America in the pants, get the move on for us. Because if these companies want to stay competitive in the world, they're going to have to move in this direction. Otherwise, they're going to be squeezed out by these governments. Pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable. Hey, I want to tell you about our good friends over at stamps.com. So if you are going to the post office these days, like, what is this, 1998? You don't need to go to the post office. You can go to stamps.com. So easy to go to stamps.com and get actually save money on all of your postage. It's cheaper than going to the post office. And see right here on your screen, if you click that little microphone on the upper right-hand corner and you enter that promo code INVEST right there, you type it the word INVEST, and you hit submit, guess what? You will get a special offer, a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a digital scale, free. No long-term commitments or contracts. See, welcome, Morning Invest listeners. Boom, you get, just use that code INVEST. So the summer, you know, is really, really showing some welcoming signs of normal life again, finally get back to enjoying life's little pleasures, like just going to see a movie, getting out there, and of course, going to the post office. No, going to the post office. Who wants to wait in line at a hot post office? Mail and ship anytime with stamps.com, anywhere, right from your computer. You can send letters, ship packages, and pay less, a lot less, with discounted rates from the USPS and UPS. Stamps.com saves businesses thousands of hours and tons of money every year. We love stamps.com. We, you know, send a lot of packages for the company, and so it's so much easier. We just print them out, print the labels out right at home, weigh it on our digital scale, and guess what? You can even schedule a pickup. So we don't have to go and drop it off. Super great. There's no risk. Use my promo code INVEST. You get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in the word INVEST. That's stamps.com, promo code INVEST. Never go to the post office again. Thanks, stamps.com. All right, let's talk about the stimulus now and the updates on what the Democrats are hoping to achieve over the next few weeks. And a big thorn in Democratic side, once again, of course, is Joe Manchin. So Senator Manchin coming out yesterday and blasting the stimulus package. Not surprising. Not surprising at all that he would come out and slamming it. He said that he's very, very disturbed about the reconciliation proposal, specifically as it relates to climate change. Now, if you're just new to what's going on in, with Washington this week, you know, you'll know that on Monday, Tuesday, they announced a $3.5 trillion new infrastructure package that would is aimed at sort of helping families and targeting poverty. A big piece of that, though, is climate change, making sure that they're moving towards, you know, solar energy, electric power grid, all of those things are part of this. He says he's incredibly disturbed by it. Bernie Sanders, though, is on the front of this and has been negotiating with President Biden on this in the Senate. So this has progressives very, very excited. But then when you have a moderate Democrat, might as well be calling him a Republican, like Joe Manchin, who is, of course, from West Virginia and tied to the coal industry, of course he's not happy about this. This is Manchin's reaction to hearing about the 3.5. And he must be pissed that he's not involved in the negotiation process.
What do you think of the Democrats' $3.5 trillion?
Well, we just heard about it. I heard about it this morning or late last night, my staff. So we're anxious to basically review it. They've worked hard on it. We want to see it. And also, I've been very clear that I want to see the pay for it and make sure that whatever we do is going to be globally competitive.
Is $3.5 trillion too high? Is $3.5 trillion too high?
Depends if we can pay for it and still be globally competitive.
You have said pretty clearly that $2 trillion was probably the max you can go. Are you even open to the idea of going to $3.5 trillion?
Well, I'm open to looking at everything they've provided, okay? They're going to have to provide all the information that's going to be needed. They've worked hard. They should have a proposal. The president's going to come today and explain. We'll listen to that. We'll look at the proposal, look at the priorities they have for our country, and then basically look at how we're going to pay for it. And if we have to, with tax adjustments being made, is it going to be globally competitive?
Does it have to be completely paid for?
I think we should start paying for stuff.
Senator, would you everything, but is that some red line for you?
There's no red lines. Basically, the bottom line is common sense. The American people have, we have a debt of $28.5 trillion right now, okay? We have indications of inflation is spiking. There's a lot of things of concern. What's going to happen to the generation coming after us if we don't have some kind of controls or some basically brakes on some different things? So I'm just looking at everything in a holistic way. I know we have needs in our country, and we have.
He's looking at it in a holistic way. I like that. He's looking at it in a holistic way. He goes on to say, I know they have a climate portion in there, and I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned about the climate portion in there. I'm very, very disturbed because they're eliminating fossil fuels, and I'm finding out that there's a lot of language in places. They're eliminating fossils. That's what he said. They're eliminating fossils, which is very, very disturbing.
Technically not wrong, but not right. The fossils we're thinking of.
Exactly. It's not like we're taking like an old flounder fossil and that's what we're using. But okay. He said, I'm very, very disturbed by it because if you're sticking your head in the sand and saying that fossil fuel has to be eliminated in America and they want to get rid of it and thinking that it's going to clean up the global climate, it won't clean it up at all. If anything, it would be worse. It would be worse. It'd be worse, Joe says. So why is he saying all of that? Of course he's saying all of that because Senator Manchin, of course, maintains lucrative ties to the coal companies that pay him a lot of money. And his financial disclosures over the years, we've seen him again, even going back to 2011. He makes a lot of money from the coal companies. So of course he's not going to be in favor of reducing our dependence on these on all these pollutants. And moving towards a cleaner environment. Of course he's not. If you're being paid for them, paid by them.
Yeah, I mean,
that's
if
what you're concerned about.
You want changes, like amend his statement from how are we going to pay for it to how am I going to get paid if this right. goes away?
Yeah, like how am I going to make my, in 1 year getting, you know, $1.3 million, you know? How am I going to, how many from my income from Enter Systems? $417,000. He routinely gets money raising right from his right from these coal industry guys. Right in his pocket. You think he has your interests at heart? Of course he doesn't. That's why he wouldn't raise the minimum wage in West Virginia. Because he heard right from the coal lobby that said, don't do it. Oh, you mean these poor coal miners? Like they don't deserve to have a better wage? Allow them to unionize? Be better taken care of? He said, my state's fine. They're fine. They don't even, maybe they would go to $11 an hour, but most of the West Virginians, they don't care. They don't need more money. I love West Virginia. I used to live there in southern West Virginia, in Bluefield. It's not wealthy. People there are hurting. But he's got his money coming in for those coal companies. Yeah. Unbelievable. Which brings me to this question. How many jobs do you need to have in the United States in order to make ends meet? Turns out you need quite a few jobs. In one particular story, you need four jobs in order to live in the state, to work in San Francisco. Four jobs. I wish I was joking about this, but you need four jobs in order to live and work in San Francisco. Actually, it's not even four, it's 4.9. 4.9 is what you need to live and work in San Francisco. So some of you said three. You're close, but the correct answer is four, 4.9. Isn't that amazing? How can you do that? No wonder all of these big companies can't hire people because they can't afford to live where your office is. So I think we're seeing a transformative moment right now in work, you know, working remotely or working, or businesses trying to bring people back to an office. They can't afford to live there, like New York City, for instance. You're going to have to lower taxes. Just to work in New York City, you pay a New York City tax, even if you live in New Jersey. But if your office is in New York City, you pay that tax just because you work in New York City. So they tax you to work.
Well, 4.9 jobs. Like I didn't feel lazy when I woke up this morning, but now I realize I'm not doing enough. I still have like 2.9 jobs to get today.
Yeah, you're being lazy, man. Get out there.
Sorry.
More jobs.
I guess I'm just looking for government handouts.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, George W. Bush clapping for that woman who said, I work three full-time jobs. And that's a uniquely American thing. Way to go. A minimum wage, if you're on, and this is particularly a minimum wage, right? So like Joe Manchin, who didn't want to raise the minimum wage, on minimum wage, need to work 4.9 jobs just to make their rent, just to make ends meet in San Francisco. And you want to understand, like, so you have all these businesses that say, we can't find workers. Well, okay. Well, what if you paid more? Number one, then the people could actually afford to live in the city where your job is. You know, if you're like you, if you run like a small bodega or something like that in San Francisco, forget about it. Like, how are you going to hire someone? How are you going to do that? If the wages, I mean, you got to pay them more. If the rent is so astronomical, it's just out of whack. Something needs to change.
But the interesting thing about that is, like, with that 4.9 jobs at minimum wage, in order to live in the city, like to have workers there working that job, that would mean an employer would have to pay them 4.9 times more than minimum wage for them to survive. Like, it's really like an issue with housing prices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an issue with housing, and it absolutely is the issue. Runaway housing prices, so forcing people to move to Europe, and companies are, you know, continue to screw over their employees. You know, continue. They're like, if you leave it up to companies, most companies will not raise wages. They just won't. They won't do it. But it's okay for us to continue to subsidize all of these Wall Street companies and big businesses. But when it comes to helping workers actually earn a living wage, we don't do it. And Joe Manchin, you know, he's happy to take millions of dollars in money from coal companies in order to keep the people of West Virginia poor. You know, it's just disgusting. And you don't see anybody talking about this. You know, we get a little question yesterday on home prices during the thing, when Fed Chief Jerome Powell's like, hey, we can't really do anything about it, you know? We can't really do much about it. We're the Fed. We can't really do much about housing prices. That's not really our thing. That's what Congress has to figure something out. Okay, well, if interest rates are like at 1% or 2% in the United States, I mean, today they were at 2.6%, I think, in the newsletter we covered that, 2.67% for a 30-year fixed mortgage. It's essentially free money right now. But, you know, so these interest rates are incredibly low, but the prices have skyrocketed and people can't afford them. I mean, it's just a really troubling situation. And that's why the US dollar is just, you know, the US dollar continues to lose money, continues to lose value day after day after day. And the value of a dollar continues to just go not anywhere nearly as far as it used to. Incredibly troubling. You know, many of you asked about an update. We spoke to our friends over at Gold Mountain Resources, a company that is a gold producer doing some incredible work in Canada. And so I had a chance to catch up. You were asking about updates, and there's some big news coming from this company, Gold Mountain. So I had a chance to sit down and talk with them about what's happening right now in the broader economy, what's happening with inflation, how is gold stacking up as a standard that we can all get behind, and what does this look like for their company? My next guest is the CEO and director of Gold Mountain, and he knows quite a thing or two about current gold prices, what we're seeing by way of inflation, all of this talk on Wall Street and in Washington right now, of course, what's happening with this infrastructure package. Could it be north of $6 trillion? If it is, how are we going to pay for it all? And what happens to the U.S. dollar if that is the case? Joining me now is the CEO and director of Gold Mountain, Kevin Smith. Kevin, great to have you here on the show. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
Good to be here with you. So let's talk about it. For those of our viewers that don't understand what Gold Mountain is, could you give our audience a little synopsis of Gold Mountain, what it looks like, and the history behind your company?
Yeah, so Gold Mountain is a fairly recent new issuer, and it's an exciting opportunity that's a little bit different from what most people in gold mining are going to be used to. This is a past producer that we were able to pick up at a really steep discount. There's about $50 to $60 million in historic spends on the property. We bought it for $1 million down from Equinox Gold Corp. And then we had a $9 million promissory note, of which we've made our first $3 million payment. There was 127,000 meters of historic drilling on the property, and it's produced twice historically at an average of 97 grams a ton, which is extremely rich. So we're excited to get it back into production. We bought it in May of 2019. We've been working really hard to get our permit, which we're expecting in the next month or so. And then once back into production, we're going to be using the cash flow to continually aggressively drill the project as well as expand the production profile. So, you know, non-dilutive fashion of expansion is really the story here. We've kept the cap table extremely tight and held in strong hands. And as we march this thing into production, we think we have a pretty exciting next 6 months in front of us.
So from the layperson's perspective, what actually unfolds over those next 6 months from production and actually, and from an investor perspective, someone sitting there saying, hey, maybe I want to invest in Gold Mountain. What does that look like for that long-term investor?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've already received our construction permit, which is a huge vote of confidence from the province. So site's already under construction right now. Part of that construction permit is something called a gravel borrow, which essentially lets us get into waste rock mining immediately. So we're stripping all of the granite that doesn't have any gold in it so that we can get down to the vein. We anticipate being down to the vein in late August, early September. We then have it sit on our ore stockpile and a third party does an assay and sampling program. Come October, we start delivering it to New Gold, who is our ore processing partner. They get 10% of the gold and silver that we produce, and we keep the remaining 90%. The reason that's super important is it gives us a really lean capex when we go into production. We don't have to build a mill. We don't have to have tailing storage on site, which causes a whole bunch of environmental review and delays. So this lets us get right into production, and we expect cash flow by November. Once we're in cash flow, the turnover is excellent. We have a 17-day payable. And we're going to use that cash flow to really aggressively drill out this property. And we intend to have this up over 1 million ounces by fall. And we feel there's probably at least two or three more pockets on the property that have these high grade veins of gold and silver in them. And we're looking at trying to grow this up to a multi-million ounce deposit that's in production at a minimum of 65,000 ounces a year within the next couple of years here.
Nice. Now, we've noticed just through our research some extremely large insider purchases in the last few weeks with the company. Can you comment on why management, why you guys are buying up so many shares of the company?
Yeah, we just recently did a financing, and the stock price, when you do a financing, usually takes a bit of a hit. We're extremely confident in what we're doing, and you know, we're leading by example and putting our money where our mouth is. None of management is taking a salary. We're all equity remunerated until we get into cash flow. And I think that really speaks to our confidence in the project, and not only that, but our ability to execute. So again, we're trying to do a little bit different story than your typical Vancouver mining company where, you know, it changes faces every couple of years and, you know, there's big splashy salaries. This isn't a lifestyle company. We want to build a larger gold producer here, and the Elk Project, which we're getting off the ground right now, is going to be the foundation to do just that.
Awesome. Well, congrats on that, guys. And congrats on the success of what you and what you guys are about to do, which is really great. And I've been super bullish. Of course, my audience knows I've been super bullish on commodities. Let's talk about commodities now. They seem like they've been waiting to break out, and you're starting to see lumber, copper prices break out. When do you think gold is going to start to gain some momentum? We look at gold prices. They've been hovering around that 1700, 1800, back to 1700, 1800. Hasn't hit that 2000 yet. I'm waiting for it. So what do you think is going to be the biggest catalyst that we need for a breakout on gold, silver, copper, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're coming off of the baseline economic numbers from COVID, which obviously have made 2021 look really strong. I think reality is going to start setting in here, you know, mid to late summer. And I think in fall, you're going to see it going back up again. I mean, when we bought this project, gold was at $1,250 and the economics still made a lot of sense. So even at the prices it is today, we're still extremely bullish on the project. But obviously, the higher gold and silver go, the better. You know, with Basel III being implemented, I think that's going to help, you know, keep some of the banks on side. But it sounds like, you know, the bank cartel found a carve out for the London banks, at least. So hoping to see something on that side to keep them honest, because the real problem here is all the manipulation in the paper gold market, in my opinion. And like to see that come to an end, and so we can get some actual real price discovery. But yeah, we're extremely bullish on gold price. I mean, a potential $6 trillion infrastructure budget. I think we've bought the most bonds and printed the most money as we have in the last quarter. These talks of tapering, I don't know if there's a lot of weight behind them. I just don't see how they can taper or raise rates. You know, I think, you know, cheap, loose monetary policy is going to be here for a while. And if history is any indicator, I think gold's going to perform really well in this really inflationary environment. Looking forward to seeing the numbers coming out this week on inflation. And really, I think this is a positive environment for the precious metal space. And being in junior miners is a great way to leverage that opportunity.
Do you think, you mentioned inflation, we're going to see those numbers this week, and it'll really, I think, set the pace for the rest of the year. What are your thoughts on the gold industry as a whole? I mean, we're printing money like crazy, $30 trillion now in debt. Is this the smart, safe play for people, long-term store of value, preservation of wealth? Do you think the world is going to really turn back to gold in a big, big way?
I mean, we always turn back to gold when fiat currencies fail. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but I don't think any economy in the history of time has ever recovered from these levels of debt that we're now under right now, right? And not just the US, but kind of all Western countries and central banks have taken on this loose monetary policy. And you got to go back in the history books, but you don't necessarily have to go back too far to see that this never plays out well. Gold and silver companies are printing more money than they ever have that are producing. This is an awesome environment for them. And for whatever reason, the market, you know, likes these highly overvalued tech companies right now. And, you know, bubbles always burst and crash has always recovered. And I don't even really think it's been much of a crash, or, you know, we just haven't caught up to the same pace as these other sectors of the market. But I really think gold and silver producers, it's going to be their time to shine. And, you know, when you can bolt on a lot of exploration blue sky on a project as well, you know, we feel there's a lot of excited things to be excited about this space, and our company especially. So, yeah, no, I don't know how it can play out any differently than it always has. I mean, there's a reason central banks hold gold. And, you know, there's a reason that we're so bullish on gold and silver as well.
Well, Kevin, what's the next 10 years look like for Gold Mountain? If you want to give us a roadmap that far out, but obviously you got a pretty exciting 6 months. Where do you guys see the company in 10 years, 5-10 years from now?
Yeah, the Elk Project is an awesome opportunity for a young company to build a foundation off of. But we really want to be a larger scale producer and continue going out and acquiring these projects where someone spent a lot of money exploring and developing them and potentially didn't have the right operations team behind them. We have a really strong operations team. Our president and our COO are both mining engineers who have permitted, built, and run mines here in British Columbia and all over the world. So we want to continue to acquire projects like this that are kind of overlooked and bring our operations experience and our ability to build companies out in a lean fashion and continue growing how many ounces we produce a year and become a going concern here in British Columbia. It's a really safe jurisdiction that we operate in, very predictable government and regulation environment. And, you know, this is home for us. We're 3.5 hours away from the project. So we're able to go up there multiple times a week and check in and make sure sure things are going well. So I would see a continued push once the Elk is in production to go out and find similar assets and keep growing a larger company.
Well, congratulations on the success so far, and congrats on how this year looks like it's going to be unfolding for you guys over at Gold Mountain. I appreciate you joining us, Kevin. We'd love to have you come back on from time to time. People talk gold prices, talk about production, see what the market's looking like. I hope you'll be open to that.
All right. Thank you so much for the time.
You bet. Thanks so much, Kevin. Really appreciate it. So thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that. And really good, really interesting information. Do you hear what he said there too about, I mean, what he said there? I mean, there's the stock symbol, by the way. It's an OTC, GMTNF. You hear what he said there about the 30 year? He said 30 trillion. It's like no country in history has ever come back from that. That's really, really terrifying to think about when you have a fiat currency like that, that's teetering on the bottom. Really, really bad. All right, guys, much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here a little bit later today. I have a video I'm putting together today on an interesting company that I'm looking at right now in the shipping space. So you can check that out a little bit later today. Subscribe to the channel, guys. Smash that like button. So be careful here, guys, on AMC. Be careful. I'm taking a smaller position on this, 36. All right, guys, I got to go. Peace.